When working with an agency, you can have your project fast, cheap, or good. Which two would you choose? Welcome to Growing a Fruitful Brand, where we discuss how to create and grow a brand that makes the world a better place for you, your customers, and your employees. I'm Ben Luters, founder and art director of Fruitful Design and Strategy, and this is my business partner and brand strategist, Raj Lula. Today, we're going to share an exciting way that we at Fruitful are answering the old fast, cheap, or good question with our clients.
So let's start with the obvious question, which is why can it only be fast, cheap, or good? It really comes down to the fact that if you do it cheaply, then you're most likely working with like a freelancer or somebody who's doing this on the side of the thing that really provides for their life.
Right.
Unless you are committed to working with people who are, you know, have taken a vow of poverty or whatever, then
I always prefer to work with those people.
There's not really a way for people who are low priced to give you exclusive attention. So fast and cheap can't go together. Similarly, people who are professional at what they do, who are good at what they do, aren't going to be living in poverty because they've honed their skill set and their business practices in such a way that they have to sustain it. Like, you know, in order to be in the business for a long enough time to get good,
yeah,
then you've got to charge prices that keep your business going from year to year.
Well, because their value goes
yep.
up. As they get better,
yep.
it gets more and more valuable. So you'd have to charge those rates.
And not to mention also, those people then can be fast because they can give you exclusive attention because they're working full time, but they're not going to get good as fast if this is only ever a side gig for them.
Right, right.
So, you know, hopefully that all makes sense. It's kind of the rock, paper, scissors of the branding world or of the creative world. But to be honest, I mean, it's true for almost all businesses, right?
Right.
Like whatever product or service you deliver, if somebody asks you to do it for half the rate, you typically go, well, then I can do half of the things, or you mm-hmm. can, or you say, I can't make that my sole focus, but I can do it for you. It's just going to happen at a slower pace. We all make these decisions, especially in service-based businesses.
But yeah, we get people trying to like, you know, get our rates down. What's the first thing we do? We start taking things out of the bin.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, we can do something for cheaper. We're just not going to be able to do all these things we were talking about.
Yeah. And think about it. Let's put it in a totally different, industry. Let's talk about mechanics for a second. You know, and it's like you can have it would say, hey, can you do it cheaper? Then usually a mechanic who's looking out for you will say, look, you could go with aftermarket parts on this. Here's the pro and cons of that. The aftermarket parts are going to last a year to 2 years. So if you're going to plan to keep this vehicle, then you probably should use the manufacturer parts. So it could be fast or it could be cheaper, but it can't be better. And or it could be, hey, can you do this? I've got to have this car. We're going on a trip tomorrow. I know it's 8 o'clock at night, but can you do this? Yeah, but I'm taking time away from my family. I'm going to have to explain that to my partner and our kids. And, you know, eventually that's going to come along with me needing a vacation to the Bahamas. And so we got to pay for that in some way.
Right.
So you can't have it fast, but you can't have it cheap. And again, so I think it just makes sense, right?
Right.
These things cannot coexist or do not typically coexist in the world. The only places where you maybe do find this are in software. But then they're not really doing it cheap. They're doing something on the back end. You know, like I remember this will show my age a little bit, but back in the day, Gmail was invite only. Do you remember these days?
I don't remember. I remember Juno.com. So, I mean, maybe an Earthlink. So I'm also old,
but I don't
remember.
That time, yeah. So, I had to get an invite from my friend Crystal.
I remember that with Facebook. But I don't remember.
Well, before that, Facebook was only you had to have a university email address. But but Gmail was invite only when it was in beta. And the way that they made it free and the better email service than Outlook or whatever, Hotmail, they would scan your email for words and then serve you ads about those things.
Right.
And in fact, it was a big deal a few years later when they told you we're not going to, they made it clear. They're like, we don't read your email. We scan it for keywords, which is like, I'm not really sure what the difference is, but okay.
Scanning is how I read books.
Right. It's like, so they would scan it for keywords and then serve you ads. But there was a big deal a few years later when they announced, hey, we're not going to do that anymore. And everybody was like, oh, it's great for privacy. And the only thing I thought when they announced that was, they're getting so much more information about us everywhere else now that they don't need this. To do that. Right. So email was fast, cheap, and good. Or Gmail was fast, cheap, and good. But it wasn't really cheap. It was at the expense of your data. They were, you know, not necessarily violating your privacy.
There's always a cost.
You're paying for it in a different way.
Exactly.
And there's just not really any situations I can think of in the world where you get something fast, cheap, and good, especially not for very long. If somebody's building a portfolio and they're like maybe just launching as a business, they might be fast, cheap, and good. Or if they're doing it as a pro bono for you or something like that, it might be those things. But those are so rare that, hey, if you've got that option, great. You know, we're not going to begrudge you. Like if Apple's design team wants to take you on as a pro bono client and they're going to knock it out of the park in a week for you, of course, go for it. Who wouldn't? But
even then, though, it's not really like cheap for them. They're spending their valuable time. Yeah, and they're being paid. You know what I mean? Like there's always going to be.
It's not actually cheap.
It's just the way the world works. Yeah. So how are we answering this for our clients? What do we have to share today?
Yeah. So we have decided after, you know, this, we celebrated 10 years this year. And our model for this whole time has been, you know, to be honest, it's been kind of a model of fear of saying, we all grew up with this narrative of starving artists, you know, that if you're going to be creative out in the world, you're going to be hungry. And so my push in running this business for much of the last 10 years has been, hey, let's always keep our plate full. Let's never have downtime, all those things. And to my own detriment sometimes, you know, there's times where you burn out working like that. And, but during that whole time, we have at different times tracked how much time it actually takes to work on a specific client. And what we found is that, you know, when you add all of that up, honestly, a lot of brand projects and website projects together take about a month to do. But most of those projects span 6 months. So it's a month's worth of work that spans 6 months. And so it's obvious when you look at that math, you go, gosh, wouldn't it be great if we could just do all of the work at one time with the client? And the answer to this point for us has always been, yeah, but nobody's ever going to go for that. Right. It's, you know, that how could we get a client to commit to, you know, working fast with us and to giving feedback really quickly and to making decisions.
Well,
really
and
quickly.
While at the same time, we've had clients who, you know, express like, you know, wishing they were more exclusive to us and wishing that, you know, we were their only client or feeling like they were our only client, even though they knew that they weren't, you know? So there's obviously like this desire of like wanting that kind of focused attention and energy too.
Yeah. So this year, and you heard about it a few weeks ago or maybe a month or two ago on this podcast, we worked with Men Counseling out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Peter Capano out up there, great guy. We worked with them to do exactly what we'd always dreamed of doing, which was a brand and a website in a month. It took just over a month with him because unfortunately we weren't able to do it all at one time. It was a research and development kind of thing. But we logged every single hour that we worked with him and even with working on other clients at that time, we got it done in 45 days and the hours that it took were exactly what we'd always suspected, that we can easily get this done in under a month. Now, one of the other reasons we haven't done this in the past is because our brains typically don't value speed the way that we should. You know, we hear fast food, we think cheap garbage food,
You know? Right. Oh yeah, for sure.
But we also reserve the right to go to a Michelin star restaurant. And if the food doesn't come out quickly enough, we will complain about it. You know? And so, we have this weird relationship with speed where we think if you go too fast, you're cutting corners, you're making mistakes. And I would agree, like if we're going too fast, you are.
Right.
But a lot of times, the cause of the slowdown isn't that it really takes that long. It's that we make it take that long.
Exactly. It's all in the management and how the work is constructed. Yeah. You know? And so why does it take so long, Raj?
Well, have you ever have you ever asked your kid to clean their room?
Oh, man. More than I wish. So,
I don't know if this happens in your house. I'm not going to out anybody here. But sometimes there's this thing that happens in my house, and I won't say who does it. But it's called rage cleaning, right? You know, we're like, you're frustrated.
I'm the one that does the rage cleaning.
I'm not saying who it is in anybody's house, but you're frustrated with, oh my gosh, how has this place gotten so messy? And then you just like, you put your AirPods in and you just clean really fast. And you can get so much house cleaning done in 10 minutes. Like we'll do this with our kids sometimes, and not the rage part, but like, we'll just say, hey, what if we only ask you to clean for 10 minutes, but you have to clean for that whole 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So much gets done that quickly. And so part of the reason projects take this long is just because we drag them out. Like I remember being sent to my room as a kid to clean it, and it's like, don't come out until you're done, you know? And it's like, I wonder if my mom just wanted a break during that time, but
yeah,
it's like,
oh, yeah.
you go in there and you're like, well, okay, this is where I live anyway. And so you just go start going, oh, baseball cards, that's cool, you know, and Star Trek, whatever. You just like go through all, I was kind of a nerdy kid, but, but you just take your dear sweet time, and you also kind of run out the clock on the parents a little bit, right? Because you know that they're not going to make you not eat dinner, even if they threaten it, you know, it's like, they're not going to starve you. And they want you to go to bed. So it's like, it's 8 o'clock, go to bed, we'll figure it out tomorrow, you know? And so, like, there's just this stalling that happens. And I'm not saying it's intentional, but...
No, well, and because a big part of it, too, when it comes to, like, agency stuff is, like, you know, the fact that we're trying to do so many projects simultaneously. There isn't that focus. And so, naturally, it's like, you know, if you're saying, like, now you have to clean 6 rooms at the same time...
Well, actually,
you know,
it's like, I mean, even just... Let's take the one room analogy, right? Like... What works so much better with your kids is if you say, hey, just pick up the dirty laundry first.
Right, right.
Put it all in that basket. Okay, now anything that's trash in the trash can. Mm-hmm. Now, toys in the toy box. The room's going to be 90% clean in about 30 minutes. Like, without a doubt.
Absolutely. I'm a big... I love that we're talking about this. I spend a lot of my time cleaning with my kids. But, like, one of the things that I do, and maybe it's just because I'm an organizational guy, but, like... I always make a pile. Like, if the whole room is messy, I just push it all into one pile. It's like, okay, we just have this we have to do. Mm-hmm. Can we clean a pile? We can clean a pile. But the problem isn't when it's like, it's just sprawling, surrounding us and sprawling and in heaps. And
it keeps disappearing into a room. And
yeah,
being
it
like...
keeps like things start. It's like, no, let's like get our mind. I can put my mind around this like 3 foot, you know, area. Yeah. And kids seem to do well with that too. Yeah. And yeah, so you kind of like, yeah, manage the space.
Yeah. So another reason that projects take a long time is feedback. Mm. And in fact, I would say in a much more realistic sense, this isn't about cleaning rooms or any of that kind of thing, about dragging our feet, either on the client side or on the agency side. What really is the big concern in projects is feedback, because people, I think, in some part they want the comfort of a long time to make a decision. It's a large investment to, you know, again, because you can have it good, but you can't have it cheap if you're going to go fast. And so they're like, well, I'd rather spend a little less and have a lot longer to make the decision. Mm-hmm. And that's a trade-off some people want, but a lot of people don't, because a lot of people have deadlines that were yesterday, you know, and a lot of people have rocks if they're doing EOS, or they have 90 day goals or whatever. It says, I need to have this done by December. I need to have this done by the end of Q1. Mm-hmm. And so what we find is that even though there is this kind of veil of comfort with having a long time to make a decision, there's not typically comfort with the results of taking a long time.
Oh yeah.
And so what we're finding with our clients is that if we can sit down and help them make decisions, like be in the room with them and say, okay, tell me about, you're reacting, you know, not well to this, but you're reacting well to this. What's the difference in your mind? You know, when we were working with Peter, there were things like, finding out that he'd been a painter, like a house painter before, his career in mental health. And that made it clear that he thinks about colors. Like he's done all
kinds of really good thoughts about colors and which ones work and, you know, warm tones and traditional, you know, color palettes and stuff like that. I love what you're saying, Raj, about like helping them, because I think a lot of our clients, what we've kind of realized is, you know, it's easy on the agency side to be like, oh, they're taking so long to get feedback. But like, often they're struggling with decision fatigue or anxiety, or like they don't, you know, they know this is an important thing. They don't want to make the wrong choice. But a lot of times if they don't feel like they're being led to what the right decision is, it can stall them out too.
Yeah. Where
it's like, hey, here's a bunch of logos. Which one do you want? And then it's just like, they're looking to us as the experts.
Yeah.
And so the more involved that we are in helping them make those decisions faster, it seems to go really well.
Yeah, it's like when we get our taxes back. If we've been really involved in the tax planning process, mm-hmm. and say, hey, we're going to spend this at the end of the year to get this deduction, or we're going to donate this much, or mm-hmm. we have already had the end of year meeting about, you know, IRA contributions, kind of all those things, then when we get the tax return back and we say, hey, you guys ready to sign off on this? It's like, well, yeah, because this is, as long as everything that we've talked about is in here, then we're great.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you just shove, you know, a bunch of receipts in a box at your CPA and you don't talk about it all year, and I've had years where I didn't even know how much money I made that year, because that's kind of the nature of freelance. It's like, I don't know, I think I shot photography for, you know, some weddings and also did some brand strategy or whatever. You know, there were a few messy years in there where it's just kind of like shoving it all on the CPA's desk and going, please make sense of this.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they ask you to sign, you're like, to be honest, I don't even really know what I'm looking at.
Right.
And clients' experiences too in creative work. Like, we live in this stuff every day. And mm-hmm. so we make sense of it rather easily. But for them, mm-hmm. it's probably the only mood board they'll look at the whole year.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, we live and breathe mood boards. And that's another thing, is like a big thing with the new model that we're doing is it starts with an immersive in-person time with that client, where we're not just, waiting for them to give us which things they like. We're able to read body language and their reaction, like, you know, reactions on their faces to certain things. And to get into more personal things about, oh, they were a house painter when they were, you know, before they got into this career. Like, and so I think that's the other thing, is we're able to get more organic, real life kind of feedback and not rely on them to have to type out a thoughtful thing and, you know, about their feelings about branding. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Putting them in a bad spot.
So let's talk about that. There's a couple of things there. So feedback, as we've identified, is one of the major slowdowns in this process.
Mm-hmm.
Those slowdowns come in a few different ways. Number one is that sometimes the person you're working with isn't the only decision maker.
Right.
So like, you have a director of marketing, but the CEO really needs to be the one looking at the email. And if the CEO was on vacation and then their kid got sick and then whatever, it could be 2-3 weeks before you get an answer easily.
Right.
And so doing this work in an immersive way in person,
with the decision maker.
Yeah, making sure the decision maker is actually in the room.
Yeah.
It eliminates literally, I mean, could be 3 weeks for just one decision, but you add it up over the life of a 6-month project. It could be 3 months worth of delay that you just eliminate immediately mm-hmm. by making a lot of decisions really quickly. The other thing with feedback is that distance mechanism of, of them getting an email that's got stuff in it, so just the medium of electronic feedback. And so a lot of times this has happened so many times, and I'm not calling any of you out personally, but beware. But where we'll send an email and it will have, explanation of what they're looking at. They'll say, hey, comp A is based on this thing.
Right.
Comp B is based on this. And everybody does the same thing. They open the attachment to look at the pretty pictures. It's a human response.
Disregard,
I get
the
it. It's like having a big red button in the middle of the table. Everybody's going to push it at some point to see what it does, even if it says don't. So we've had so many conversations where the person goes, I'm struggling. I'm not really sure how we got to this comp. And you're like, well, you know, in the email I said, and literally so many people have said, I should probably have read that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Unashamedly, they say.
We're even sending videos now, and people go, I probably should have watched the video. And we can actually see, just so you know, if you've watched the video. So we know.
Right.
And so those are the kinds of things that slow down a project. And what we figured out is that if you make a lot of those decisions, which are just gut things anyway, for the most part, it's not like you're going out and getting a degree in color theory or, you know, polling 500 people about their favorability towards the color yellow or whatever. You know?
Yeah.
It's like you're not actually doing that work. You're just taking time to mull over it. And you're probably going to end up in the same place that your gut reaction started.
Right, right, right.
And so if you can, we'll just make those decisions quickly. Just trust your gut on something.
Mm-hmm. And trust us to lead as well. I think that's the other thing, is it kind of puts things in the right spot. Like, you're the expert in your company and what you do. And we're the experts in that situation. We're the experts in brand. And so when we can kind of work together and trust one another in the room, it's a really cool thing. I was even just thinking about when we were working with Peter, with Men Counseling, and and you were working in on the copy for his homepage, and you know, Raj is typing away. Raj loves doing these kinds of immersive, like writing in public. He likes writing in public, like a freak. Like, I mean, he might be the only person who likes writing in front of other people. But you know, he's doing this, and he's doing a great job. And but Peter's sitting right next to him while he's doing this, and like kind of, you know, pushing. And there's like a couple words that Raj used that Peter's like, hey. In our industry, we don't say it like that. We say it like this. And Raj's like, ooh, awesome. And so he's like, he's deferring to the expertise of Peter, who's the expert in his arena. But at the same time, Raj is using his expertise as a masterful copywriter. And so it's just a really cool thing. And that's what, I mean, to be a part of that and to be going into this new model is really exciting for me, because you get to work with a client in a much more, it's like a dance. You kind of dance with a client in a way that, like,
reciprocal.
You never really get to do in the real world. Probably just because we're all so busy and stuff. But when you schedule it this way, when you force it into this this system, it's amazing what you can do.
Yeah,
in a short amount of time.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is too, this isn't our only experience doing this. You know, Mend wasn't the only one doing it. We're working with Ingrid Waddell, you know, who we've worked with a lot doing Cattle ID and other things in the past. And, you know, she's launching some new work. And, you know, when you have a client that you've worked with for 5 years and there's a lot of trust there, and she can just say, hey, this is kind of what I'm looking for. And we can get things up really fast.
Oh, yeah, gosh.
We've done that with our personal brands, you know? Like, we took a trip to Chicago recently, and you'd done a few sketches on my brand, and it's like just getting time on a flight to sit down and go, hey, this is where I'm not quite sure yet. And then you go, okay, and taking all that. And then it's like a day or two later, you've got this amazing thing that blows my mind.
Oh, thanks, you know? Raj.
And
I'm not as good at sketching in front of people as Raj is writing in front of people, but apparently I can do it because I was just like, you know, sketching
just getting all of that feedback in such a concentrated form and then going away for a couple of days. You know, it was great that you did a couple of sketches in front of me, but you wouldn't have had to, because I knew that you were catching it. And then that was proven by the result that we got a few days later.
Exactly. Instead of just kind of going off, you know, in your, what you call a hobbit hole, kind of, you know, in isolation and then coming back.
Where there's
back
emails after and there's Slack messages and there's phone calls about
not quite getting it and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I will say, like, that's what we do on all of our own projects. You know, like the Growing a Fruitful brand logo that you're probably seeing on your screen right now came really fast because we knew what we wanted out of it. And we just like sat down, focused on it, made decisions really quickly. So when we make decisions internally, we can do it really, really fast. And so if we bring clients into that same internal process and go, hey, we're actually going to sit here with you for 2 days. And so all you get to actually experience the speed of professionals doing what they do unencumbered. And it's incredible.
Oh my goodness. You can accomplish so much. So what are some of the stuff that we get done during that time?
Yeah. So we start with, learning about your ideal customer, because we are so focused on your brand is for them. it's got your DNA in it, but it's for them. And your website especially is for them. So we talk about figuring out who your ideal customer is. Then we do your story brand brand script, which, as you've heard me say many, many times, the story brand brand script positions your customer as the hero and positions you as the guide to their success. Mm-hmm. Another way to say that is, instead of telling your story, which is something about, you know, a grandpa and a truck, or, you know, starting something in a garage or whatever.
5 million years of combined experience.
Yeah. Instead of telling your story, it's entering your customer's story as a guide to their success. And when you do those things, you know, we've got a great foundation for messaging that turns into your website wireframe. So in these 2 days, we can get all of the words for your homepage knocked out.
It's crazy.
Just doing that alone in 2 days would speed up every project.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Oh yeah. Cause I mean, just that alone, like, think of how long that can take.
Yeah.
Traditionally, when you're balancing lots of other clients and other, you know,
typically, I mean, honestly, emails. So brand script, wireframe, and sitemap will typically take 3 weeks, because mm-hmm. I need to have enough time for you to approve your brand script, approve your wireframe, and get to sitemap. So, which sitemap is deciding right. every page that's going to be on your website. Mm-hmm. Doing those all in the room and saying, hey, I'm going to ask you to sign off on this. And right. And it's 2 days, so you do have literally one night to sleep on it, but you probably don't really need more. Like, you know, if it sounds like you or not, and right. and you know, honestly, if that's not you, it's okay to say that this isn't the right way for me to do this project.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's a good point, Raj, because like, this may not be for everyone, but that's not, you know, it doesn't have to be for everyone yeah. because we only have so many slots, you know, and.
But the people who are salivating out there yeah. going, oh my gosh, I've waited like, oh, for this
I'd
forever.
Love to go faster. Yes.
This is 100% for you.
Exactly.
So we do brand script, wireframe, sitemap, ideal customer work. And then on the design side, what do we do?
Yeah, so we take them through our design discovery. It's like this interactive questionnaire time where we basically are getting to know them and their industry and all, you know, all that kind of
preferences,
stuff.
Preferences.
Exactly. And so, you know, traditionally this is like, you know, done as a form, and then we have a Zoom call and we get together and we talk about it, and then we go share with the team. And, you know, this usually takes a lot of time. But again, we do this live in front of them, and we get all kinds of great little
can you give us a little insight into what I'm thinking, especially of the slide with the sliders on it, because you know, we hear like design discovery and questionnaire, and it's like, man, if that's after lunch, I'm gonna go to sleep, you know. But it's like,
yeah,
it's actually really fun, and part of it is because we ask questions like that one with the sliders on it that ask people to help us understand the like personality and the DNA of, yeah. of the company. What are some of the like options?
Yeah,
on
I'm
that
trying
one?
To remember all the ones on that slide. But what he's talking about is one of our designers put together this really cool graphic in our brand discovery questionnaire that has, you know, two extremes,
like playful and authority.
Right, exactly. You know? And then it's a slider, and so you with the client, you kind of place the dot. You know, how authority, you know, feeling do you see
are
yourself?
Are we traditional or rebellious?
You exactly, know, that kind things. Of stuff. And it's really fun to see where people kind of see themselves. And especially if you get a couple people in the room, you get some really interesting conversations.
Yeah.
Because some people are like, oh, yeah, we're all authority. And then someone's like, well, not so fast. And so, like, everyone thinks it's all about where on that, like, as if there's like, specific things mean specific things, yeah. but it's really about the conversation and the thought behind, like, do I want to be perceived as more playful than yeah. like, you
well,
know,
and
authoritative?
It's also like, I mean, where it is online matters some, because what it ends up being is that these things group together, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for example, there are some companies that we work with, in fact, quite a few of them, who see themselves as rebellious authorities, which is funny, right? Because
oh,
it
yeah.
feels so contradictory.
Yeah, you think if you're rebellious, then you must not be.
You must be resisting authority.
Exactly.
But
is it no? We're the authority on rebellion.
Yeah, but but realistically, what they're saying is that we're rebellious because we're an authority. Everybody else does it the traditional way because they, you know, because they don't know any better. But but we have found the keys to the kingdom here, or we have found the better way to do this. And so we're going against the stream of the rest of the industry because we know that this could be better. And so you can be both rebellious and an authority. And but if you're rebellious and playful, then you're kind of more in the, like, you know, poo-pourri kinds of brands of the world, or, you know, those types of Dollar Shave Club that, they're like, look, there's not a lot of invention here in the industry. You don't need to see our PhDs working on the scent that's going to go in your toilet. you just need to know that we get this kind of silly, awkward problem, right, and we're going to help you fix it. And we're being a little non-traditional about it.
Yeah, so it's super fun. We go through this you know, interactive questionnaire time. Then some of the other things that we do together during this in-person time is, based on that, we create a visual mood board. You know, I put this together, and then we have time to review it with the client and kind of get their reactions and make comments, you know, about, like, you know, different things. And so a mood board is basically, you know, a combination of different found design elements, colors, typography, things of that nature, that we think, you know, kind of might resonate with the client and the project. And so, again, a mood board, back in the day, we used to send a lot of mood boards to clients. Like, what do you think of this mood board? Mm-hmm. Like Raj said a minute ago, like, if you don't just, like, see mood boards every day, you can be overwhelmed. You have no idea what you're looking at. It's like, oh, that's a lot of colors. That's a lot of ideas.
Well,
like,
there's so many things that, you know, when you're looking at a mood board and say it's got the Harley Davidson logo on it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I like orange and I like that font, but I don't want to be associated with bikers. And it's like, no, it doesn't have anything to do with bikers. It's more about, does the typography resonate with you? Does the shield resonate with you? All of those things.
And that stuff just works so good in the room.
Yeah.
When it's like, so and they're like, well, I don't really like Harley Davidson. It's like, well, and then you get a chance to, instead of, like, them getting that by themselves, you know, at their computer, and, like, having to, like, you know, think about all weekend about how much, you know, they hate motorcycles or they got injured on a motorcycle or something.
And feeling like we didn't get it.
And, like, feeling like we're detached.
They're like, why would they send this to me? They don't know me at all.
Right. That could just be a quick comment and then you move on. And so we just find that you know, doing a mood board kind of more as a conversation. And then the cool thing that can happen too, and I think it happened with Peter a little bit, where we were able to pull things that they were mentioning earlier about, like, you know, some of their competition and other things like that, other brands they like, and bring that right into the mood board as well, same day.
Yep.
And so it's like, oh, you're listening, and, you know, or this comment I made, you know, he might have made about colors or something like that. It's like, oh, I was listening to you. Here's a color section that's kind of based off of some of those things that I heard you saying earlier in the day. And so, anyways, it's really you know, live and on the spot. And then following that, we share some initial logo sketches and stuff. So, you know, this is for people, you know, trying to get a new visual brand and a website. And so showing some ideas, some rough hand-drawn ideas, but building off of both the brand discovery conversation and the mood board, it's a perfect time to, like, look at just initial sketches. And it's, you know, it's a little vulnerable to show your sketches like that. But when you show them in that way, where it's like there's all this context and there's been all this conversation and you're there to kind of be like, you know, reassure them, these are just sketches. I did these just now, like, I did them today while Raj is doing a strategy session, I'm doing these sketches. And again, this kind of a model isn't for every designer either, right?
Yeah,
like I was 100%. Joking about Raj. Raj has a specific, you know, gift of being able to do things live, right? He's able to write live, and you get Raj on a whiteboard, and it's just like it's
I weirdly
a good dream.
Prefer it, you know.
Oh, like, I know.
Because how many times
I can't have a conversation with this guy? I can't believe there's not a whiteboard in here.
Like, I mean, how many times have we been in a meeting where, like, with our staff, where they're like, what should we say in the social post? And I go, something like this. And they go, cool, could you write that? And it's like, I just did. You know, like, I said out loud the first draft. And,
exactly.
And I don't know why it is. I'm a little bit of a
freak.
Yeah,
he just wired this way. But similarly with me, like, that's something we've just kind of realized is, like, we move fast.
We're fast.
We love it. Like, I come up with, you know, logo sketch ideas really quickly. And I think in the past, I've just kind of thought, like, oh, maybe everyone does this or whatever. Yeah. As time has gone on, I've come to realize that's not really true. Like, this happens to be the way that we like to work as well.
Right.
And so if we can kind of combine that with something that that clients are wanting, that gift of ours with something that clients really might like. It's really, really fun. And yeah,
So I was in Nashville, at the StoryBrand conference the end of October, and I was talking to another agency owner, and he was saying, he's like, Hey, I'm not like one of you creative guys. And I was like, you own a creative agency, you know? Right. And he's like, no, I came from sales. Like, I need to hire creative people, but I structure the business. I run it, all those things. And you and I over the years have just discovered that, you know, agency owners do fall into a lot of different stripes where some are, you know, the very business sales analytical types. Others are creative, but they prefer to be, slow and methodical about the way that they do things. Others prefer one part of the process, but not others. And so we've kind of had to discover over the past 10 years our own strengths. And, one of the things that we've kind of shied away from is this thing that we used to call the Raj and Ben show, you know, which is ironic because you're watching a thing that is literally the Raj and Ben show.
Could be called the Raj and Ben show. You might even call it that.
But we've shied away from it because, in fact, the reason we did this podcast was because we wanted to have a way to give clients and our audience more time to hang out with us and like have these conversations because we weren't getting to have them in person.
Right.
And we're, instead of shying away from that, we're leaning full tilt into it.
Oh, we're going.
We are doing every project together and starting all of them in the room together for 2 days. So we just have this incredible momentum that, that takes you through the 30 days.
Cause we've always enjoyed it too. Like, I mean, we had some really good feedback from some clients early on when, you know, Raj and I were doing more of this stuff together of just like, you know, feeling that yin and yang, the design and strategy. I mean, we're literally called Fruitful Design
and sunshine
Strategy.
Sunshine and rain cloud.
Sunshine, we joke about that. And then when I'm rain cloud, he's sunshine. And we complete each other this way. That partnership works really well. And so I think we kind of lost our way, got distracted by management and other things and kind of siloed each other off in a lot of ways. But we just found that, like, when we get together in a room and we get together in a room with a client, and we've got a timeline, like it's incredible how much stuff can get done.
Sadly, the best word to use here is the worst corporate buzzword, but it's synergy, you know,
synergy.
Like it's when something is greater than the sum of its parts, you know, cause like the product, you know, has been good. The logos you've been making good. The messaging has been good, but together in the room, it's better, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about, how is this possible? Because it seems like it shouldn't be, you know, because it seems like fast should be anathema to good. But that's...
It's because it's so expensive. And that is what we want to end on today. send your checks and money.
just kidding. We'll edit that out. He is joking, yes.
I mean, it isn't like dirt cheap, but I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But... the reason that it's not dirt cheap is because you and I are both almost 20 years into our career now. And so you're working with people who are highly experienced, who created, I don't even know how many brands at this point. And not only created, but also studied so many brands. Like one of the things that always is incredible to me about you is that, like we were in the Chicago airport, we were in Midway, and there's this logo that I walk by every time I'm in Midway. And I fly Southwest. I'm cheap. But every time I'm in...
I have a private jet. I met him there.
I walk by this logo every time I'm in Midway. I probably have 10 photos on my phone of this particular logo. And it was while we were working on my personal branding. But it was the first time we got to walk by it together. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I love this logo. This feels so much like what I want my personal branding to be. And one of the things I knew is that there's overlapping letters. That's something that I've always liked. And then it's got a little bit of a historic feel to it. And then the colors and then the pattern are things that all work together. And what's crazy to me is when I sit with you, I can say just, I like this. And then you can start pulling out all of those elements and go, okay, well, breaking it apart, it's because... you like the Notre Dame logo, which has overlapping letters. It's a similar gold to what the Notre Dame logo is. So that makes sense as well. But the pattern thing was interesting. I hadn't necessarily thought about it. But, you know, in a lot of Indian art, there's a lot of patterning, you know, like
mandalas.
The paisley, you know, mm-hmm. that you see on a lot of prints, I think was created in India. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, it's, there's so much symmetry in Indian art and architecture. I mean, Taj Mahal, you think about how symmetrical thing is. And there's these repeated motifs throughout that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And so like you being able to pick that apart, and then not only that, also go, here's 10 other brands that are like that. It's you're like an encyclopedia of these things.
Jeez, well, thanks, Raj. I didn't know where you're going with that. I appreciate it.
And it's, what's interesting too is that like we're complicated, right? Because I can say that I like Notre Dame and I like this logo on the Chicago airport, but then I'll also say I like Banksy or street art, and then you kind of know what to do with that, or sometimes even when to disregard, or to say like, okay. One is rebellious, one is playful, or one is rebellious, one is authoritative. Mm-hmm. Which one matters more to you? Because you can't have everything. I think that's one of the things that that drags projects down, that slows projects down. As we go,
right.
I want to feel like the Banksy of Goldman Sachs, you know, or whatever. And it's like those two things don't go together, you know.
Right.
And we want it to have an Apple tech vibe to it. I promise you that you're not going to get a brand that feels like all three of those things.
Right, right.
Now, what you might get is a brand that is more Goldman Sachs, but you can put it over a Banksy, or you can put it, or you can have spray paint dripping on your website, or whatever. Yeah. And so you can filter those things so fast. I mean, it's incredible to me that when you put together a mood board. He pulls from these things that I've never even seen, but just feel right. You know, it's like, I've never even heard of this brand. You not only know the brand, but you often know who created it and what art style it's following and why it's like all of this stuff that just lives in your head.
You know, the funny thing is like, and thanks, Raj. but the funny thing about it though, is so much of it is not, it's just intuitive, you know. It's because of what he was saying about us being at this point in our career, like 20 years in, there is an encyclopedic part to it. There's just this kind of like feeling thing. I mean, when I'm making a mood board, there's just like you're just kind of vibing on a certain thing. Like, you know, you just met this client, you spent this time. And like you're kind of, you just know what's in and what's out.
But this is different from other designers. I think this is something that when we talk about it's not for every client, it's not for every designer. Mm-hmm. Because there are some designers that people go to because they want it to look a certain way.
Right.
You know, like there are certain designers that it's like, oh, we want this to look like a youth metal band or something like that.
Sure.
And it's like, oh, well, you got to go to that guy.
Because he's the guy.
That guy is the guy who does that. In fact, that's who I would go to if I was doing a youth metal band.
And that's very common with designers and illustrators. Like you hone in that style. And there's no shame in that, but you've got a good point that like one of the defining things I think about in my design style is like it's very like contextualized for the client.
Yeah,
and the project.
And you do have rules. Like one of the things that we try to believe in on every single thing. It doesn't always happen, but often. Is to have a mark and a type mark, and some people are, hey, a type mark is good enough.
Right.
Some people are a mark is good enough, but we think that in the use cases that you see these days, having both the, Coke bottle and Coca-Cola, cause you got to have something on the app and Coca-Cola, the word doesn't shrink down.
Yeah.
There's
always those guidelines.
And you have those things, but then they're highly adaptable to different styles, to different industries. My own personal brand again is reference here. Wanting to bring that Indian element in it, which is a little bit more complicated, is a little bit more patterned.
Right.
And when we got to that agreement, then you're like, oh, okay, I know how to do that. And then found beautiful ways to do it. I can't wait to show the world. I'll probably be out by the time that this episode's out.
So we'll make sure to link it in the description. This is what we're doing, guys. We're doing these 30-day brand sprints, is what we're calling them. And we are, we've got just so many seats for next year, and we're starting to take we're starting to fill them up now. Yeah. And so, anything else we want to say about, you know, how people can get involved?
Yeah. So, just a couple more things to add. One is that another way that this goes so fast and you get the same quality that everybody who's been doing this over the course of 6 months, or longer with us, mm-hmm. Is that in the room, we get such a strong foundation that you have a pretty good idea what to expect for the rest of the project.
Right. Good point.
By the time we're done at day two. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, how it actually works, kind of nuts and bolts of it in the room, is that while I'm doing story brand or mm-hmm. wireframe, you're putting together mood board.
Right.
While
we're kind of tag teaming.
Yep. And then while you're doing that, I'm looking at your competitor websites to think through sitemap. And and so there are things that actually are literally happening live in the room, which again, this is work that used to be spread out over weeks. That was kind of just, mm-hmm. After this meeting, I'll work on the mood board stuff for this client, and then we'll talk to him next week. And all that. It's like, no, let's just do it all together in a row. It's the same work, mm-hmm. just done in a concentrated form.
Exactly.
So that's one thing. The other thing is, obviously, with a model like this where there's only 12 spots, one of the reasons we haven't done it before is because we were afraid that people wouldn't wait, that people wouldn't wait until March, to start their project or they'd go across the street and work with somebody. What we're finding is that the people who do really successful with this, for one, want to work with us, that they value not only who we are, but also a process like this. It's in person, either you flying to Omaha or us flying to you. Yes, it's literally in person, even in this day of Zoom and all that. We're not going to spend 2 full days on Zoom with you and have everybody's eyeballs fall out end. Like,
please,
this is in person. This is real. We're getting on airplanes or having you come to us and stay at beautiful hotels here in Omaha. Mm-hmm. And so we're going back to just kind of an old school way of doing this because we know it works. And to the idea of waiting, one thing is that it's not wasted time because there's pre-work that you do that helps inform what we do in the room. So like, we want to know who those competitors are before we get in the room. We want to know who you aspire to, like who's the rock star in your industry, mm-hmm. or who's the gold standard in your industry. So you fill out some of that stuff beforehand. And what you're going to find, what everybody always finds, is that stuff's maybe not as clear as you thought. Mm-hmm. The director of marketing fills out the questionnaire and then takes it to the CEO for their feedback and goes, hey, is this what we're thinking? It's like, you think we're like Facebook? No, no, we're not like Facebook at all. Yeah. Or the CEO is like, we're definitely like Jiffy Lube. And it's like, do not want to be like that. And it creates these great conversations internally. So as you're waiting for March to roll around, it's an active participant in this. And if we have any questions beforehand, we can follow up with you before we get in the room to make sure that time is really, really effective.
Well, and it's also not wasted time. And it's time well spent in that, like we were saying, it's often for a similar kind of project traditionally, it's like 6 months of back and forth and all this stuff. Whereas like, you may have to wait a couple months, 2 to 3 months or something like that for your turn. But once we get there, we get it done in 30 days.
It'll be done in 30 days.
And so it's like,
So instead of starting a project in January that's going to be done in June,
right?
You can start a project in May that's going to be done in June.
Exactly.
You can start, if you get to it quickly, you can start a project in April that's going to be done in May. So you can actually get done faster, but start later.
That's exactly it. And during that time, you can be doing whatever else you're doing. Because your time is so valuable. Like, that's the other thing.
This is like if the tortoise and the hare actually played out where where the hare worked really hard the whole time, because it should have been an easy win.
Right.
And we've kind of been conditioned to this idea of just like, well, slow and steady wins the race. And it does in a lot of things like exercise, nutrition, all this stuff. Great. But in terms of like doing high level professional work, you can and should go fast for some people. Now, if you've got a board of directors that's like 12 layers deep and, this isn't for the Chase Banks of the world or those
things. That's a good point, Raj, because like we already said, it's not really for everyone, but like, this is for especially folks who have, if you got one or two decision makers or something, it works really good for that. Of course, there's going to be, you know, you know your organization, but like some, we don't want to meet with like 12 people in a room and everyone, you know, no one knows who's actually the decision maker. Like knowing who that decision maker and making sure that we are working exclusively with them, that is such an integral part of this.
Yeah. Yeah. So if people are interested in this, we're really excited for this. We've actually got several people. The most common reaction that we get is, seriously?
People are excited.
Because people always ask, who's going to be working on the project? It's us, me and Ben. They go, both of you? Yes, at the same time. At the same time? Yes, and we're only going to be working with you.
Yeah.
Really? You know, like there's some incredulity like that's that we have to
it's
overcome.
It's crazy
here.
To me.
it's exactly.
Really special.
Like in 10 years, we have never committed to this model, and what we're doing, we're literally staking our business on this, and saying no, we're going to do it this way because we are now at the point in our expertise as design and strategy that we've seen people get amazing results really fast. Mm-hmm. And we feel like we owe it to you. We feel like we know we can do better for you faster and give you the attention that you deserve. It's not for everybody. It works really great with service-based businesses. They're in like the $1 to $5 million space. It works really great with CEOs who are also the founder or owner, or you can get those people in the room. It works really great when you're in points of transition, like handing down from a parent to a child, you know, not a child, but an adult child.
We do not work with children.
running with a business, but handing down to a next generation in a business, and you know that you're going to need a reboot and you're going to need it really fast because you need to come in with energy and show what this new generation, what this next season looks like. All of those kinds of situations are really, really, really great. It doesn't work when, like I said, you've got a board of directors that's spread out over 15 different states, and it's going to take 3 months to get everybody on a call, and they've got to have approval, and they're going to have feedback, and then we got to run it by the SEC and blah, 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 you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, in those situations, you need to pick a different type of product with us, and that's totally fine. There are slower paced products for you. But if this is for you, then we're going to have an assessment up on our website really soon that that you can take that just asks you some of those questions, like, are you this type of business? Are you this type of business? And are you okay with this kind of process? And then we're going to take deposits and have and you're going to lock in your time for 2024. And that will be your spot. And we're committing to it. Like like I said, staking our business on this.
We're here for you.
Because we believe in it, and we think this is what's right for you, and we think that this is the way that we're going to grow something good together.
Thanks for joining us today on Growing a Fruitful Brand. If you found today's show helpful, don't forget to subscribe and consider sharing it with someone who might also enjoy it.
If you'd like to work with Fruitful on a branding, website, or messaging project of your own, you can always reach out on our website, fruitful.design.
But until next time, don't forget to grow something good.